Good morning, everyone. My name is Juan Guerra. I will be addressing the first point of issue on this matter, which is sufficiency of the evidence. First, I'd like to take a moment to thank the court for allowing us to be heard on this matter. We're here because the evidence before this court today, no rational trier of fact could have found Mr. Moreno Gonzalez, beyond a reasonable doubt, guilty of this offense of possession of marijuana. The trial court felt compelled, after the government rested their case in chief, to grant Rule 29s on two co-defendants that we were in trial with, as to both counts. One of those defendants was Cirilo Moreno Gonzalez, which was Jaime Moreno Gonzalez's brother, and also the passenger in the vehicle that he was in. So at the point that the Rule 29 was granted by the trial court, there was only two differences at that point. Mr. Jaime was the driver of the vehicle and the operator of the vehicle, and Mr. Jaime Moreno Gonzalez also had on his person approximately $4,400. However, $3,400 of it was in his pocket, $900 of it was in his wallet. I asked the court that those are distinguishable for the following reasons. The money that was in his pocket, he made statements that they were to be used for fuel and other expenses. Now, before I get into that, there was also testimony on our case in chief by Jesus Cuellar, who's a professional truck driver, that testified when going on a long journey, as they were here traveling from Texas to North Carolina, professional truck drivers work in groups. They work in two, so they can share time driving. He also testified that a trip of approximately 3,000 miles to North Carolina would take approximately $2,500 or so for fuel and other expenses for the team combined. What Mr. Jaime Moreno Gonzalez had in his pocket was approximately $3,400, which were for fuel and other types of other expenses, approximately $2,500 of that. The rest were for incidentals, if you will.
Excuse me, I don't like to interrupt you, but because this is a sufficiency case,
yes,
I want to know what the record shows on a lot of discrete facts, if you'll bear with me.
Sure.
First, what kind of driver's license did your client have?
He had the record will reflect, Your Honor, he had a CDL, professional driver's license. He was also the owner of two other vehicles, and he also was a contract driver to make ends meet, if you will. He also, aside from driving his own vehicles, he was also a contract driver and drove other loads for other trucking companies, as
right.
He did in this case.
Now, was it his cousin who arranged this trip with the shipper?
That is correct, Your Honor. The owner of the vehicle is a man by the name of Isa Moreno, who I believe the record will reflect that they've known Mr. Isa Moreno since they were children. I don't specifically recall the record stating that they were cousins, but I know they've known each other since they were small children. Mr. Isa Moreno was the owner of that vehicle. He's the one that contracted both Jaime and Cirilo Moreno Gonzalez to drive the load from Texas to North Carolina. And let me also say this, that whenever Jaime and Cirilo picked up that load, it was locked, sealed, and loaded.
And does the record reflect where they picked it up?
The record reflects, I believe, they picked it up from South Texas in the San Juan Alamo area. And the record...
Well, they were coming from Mexico.
No, Your Honor, the record will reflect respectfully that they picked up the tractor or the trailer in the San Juan Alamo area, which is in South Texas, in close proximity to the border and to Mexico, but not in Mexico. I believe
so. They were going through a checkpoint from Texas.
That is correct.
Into the checkpoint.
That is correct. This is a checkpoint case, Your Honor, which is approximately 45 minutes from the U.S.-Mexico border.
Now, on the bill of lading, did it reflect the same weight as the weight of the cargo?
Well, Your Honor, as to the bill of lading, what the record will reflect is that my client, Jaime Moreno Gonzalez, did not create the bill of lading. He never intended to pass that bill of lading off to any federal agent.
He's a truck driver, and he knows he's got to have a bill of lading, and he's got one. And what I'd like to know is, I know there's some deficiencies in it about address of delivery, but I'd like to know what it showed about the weight of the cargo.
Your Honor, I don't recall specifically the weight of the cargo. What the prosecutor in this case said, the bills of lading, they look pretty good. They look pretty good. You had to look into this bill of lading like the federal agents did and actually do some investigation, do some digging to determine that some of these details.
Did it list produce?
I'm sorry?
Did the bill of lading list produce?
The record reflects that it did not specifically list produce, Your Honor. However, what the record reflects is that my client, Jaime Moreno Gonzalez, saw the bill of lading. He saw the bill of lading, where it was going to, where it was coming from. He did not. There was no testimony put up by the government that Mr. Moreno inspected that bill of lading, looked at it thoroughly. And furthermore, there was no testimony put on by the government that it is standard practice for a professional truck driver to look at the bill of lading in such detail that he would be able to determine that there were some deficiencies.
Does the record reflect that he told the border agent what the load was?
The record does reflect, Your Honor, when he was there at the checkpoint, he told the Border Patrol agent that carrying produce, which...
But we don't know whether the bill of lading listed that or not.
Your Honor, I believe the record will reflect that the bill of lading did not specifically say they were hauling produce. However, the record doesn't reflect specifically what it said it was hauling.
Does the bill of lading reflect a weight of the load?
Your Honor, without the bill of lading in front of me, I don't believe I can answer that.
Well, it's in the record.
Correct. It is in the record.
Okay. Was there a second bill of lading that he also had, though?
Yes, Your Honor. There was a second bill of lading that was dated in July. However, let me remind the court that this vehicle did not belong to my client, Jaime Moreno Gonzalez. It belonged to Isai Moreno, who was also, at the time we went to trial, it should be worth noting that at the time we went to trial, he was a fugitive. He was arrested. And subsequently, his case was dismissed. That being said, there's nothing in the record, there's no evidence put forth by the government that the July bill of lading that Mr. Jaime Moreno Gonzalez was aware that bill of lading was there, that he created it, that he intended to pass it on, that he had anything to do with it.
It was just in the truck?
It was just in the truck in an overhead compartment. That's it.
So no evidence that he handled it at all?
None whatsoever, Your Honor.
There was no address for delivery on the bill of lading, was there?
There wasn't a specific address, Your Honor. However, he said he was traveling to North Carolina, and what the bill of lading reflected is that load was destined for North Carolina. But the deficiency in the address, the zip code, if the record would reflect that the zip code was inaccurate. But the ship-to address was to North Carolina. And let me... There was also testimony by Jesus Cuellar.
How can he deliver if he doesn't have an address?
Let me address that, Your Honor. There was testimony by both Jesus Cuellar, which was a defense witness, and Roman Lerma, who was a government witness, that oftentimes it is common practice that sometimes the bills of lading, you're deflected from, or you're asked to deliver the load somewhere else. Simply because the ship-to address is on the bill of lading doesn't mean without question that's where it's going. Oftentimes you'll get a call from the person who set up the transport and say, look, we don't need that load there. We need you to take it somewhere else. That is in the record both by a government witness, Mr. Roman Lerma, and a witness for the defense. That is common practice. It happens all the time.
What did the jury hear about where the drugs were actually headed?
Your Honor, there was no testimony as to where. All the jury heard was that this load was destined to North Carolina. That's it.
Does the record reflect what the brother, Cirillo, or whatever his name is, had in the way of funds, cash, or anything on him?
The record does not reflect that, Your Honor.
Okay. What does the record reflect that your client had driven for Turner Enterprises before?
It does not reflect that, Your Honor.
Okay. How about the record reflects the 1,329.5 pounds of marijuana, and you say the bill of, you don't know whether the bill of lading reflects a weight of, was, is there anything in the record that this trailer was weighed at the border?
No, there's no record to reflect that the trailer was weighed before it it left North Carolina or at the border.
All right, and where does the record reflect that he picked this up, your client? Where did he get the, I know it reflects that the trailer was sealed and locked when he got it, but where did he pick up the tractor trailer?
Your Honor, the record will reflect that in both direct and cross-examination of the case agent, Mr. Ramos. Specifically, I don't have the specific notation as to where the record would reflect that, but it is in direct and cross-examination of Mr. the case agent, Mr. Ramos, in this matter.
And that was where in Texas?
San Juan Alamo, Texas, which is approximately 5 to 10 minutes from McAllen.
Okay, and there was a lot of talk about the government made a point that, that this was a light load for a semi, that it was would have been cheaper to send it in a smaller truck. But what I'd like to know is there anything in there about what a standard load of produce in a semi would weigh? Because produce, of course, weighs a lot less than packaged marijuana.
There, the government put forth no evidence as to what a standard produce load should weigh. Also, there is no evidence that Mr. Jaime Moreno actually inspected thoroughly that load.
Well, he got it. It was already locked and sealed.
Correct. That's correct. And the record does reflect that the that from his perspective, the only perspective that it had, if he looked in, was a small, very small window that you can open and just see that
the
there was...
The government conceded you couldn't tell what was in there.
Correct. The government conceded that this is a hidden compartment case.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Some time for rebuttal.
Thank you,
Ms. Thompson.
May it please the court. I'm here to discuss the safety valve issue and the trial court's denial of the safety valve to Mr. Moreno. Here, the trial court held as a matter of law that if Mr. since Mr. Moreno was found guilty by a jury, that he had to admit his guilt in order to be eligible for the safety valve at 18 U.S.C. 3553F. Before he debriefed, everyone was on the same page and essentially believed that he would be eligible if he did debrief. The trial court's ruling, and that's reflected at the transcript of sentencing, page 5, the trial court said, if the jury has found the facts to be one way, including his knowledge, and he declines to acknowledge his own knowledge, then therefore, by definition, he hasn't disclosed all the facts that the jury found. The plain language of the statute provides that, first of all, the court, not the jury, decides whether or not a defendant is eligible for the safety valve. Second of all, the plain language of the statute provides that the information a defendant provides need not even be new to the government. It doesn't have to be new, it doesn't have to be helpful. And here, the information he provided was that he picked up a truck that was loaded, locked, and sealed, and that he was innocent. He did not know what was in the truck. He maintained his innocence in this case, again, where two defendants received directed verdicts, and Esau Moreno, the one who loaded, locked, and sealed that truck, his case was dismissed by the government later. And so, Mr. Moreno here was, he was maintaining his innocence at a debriefing, and then he was punished later for failing to admit his guilt. On page 14 of the transcript of sentencing, the court says, the defendant put the government to its proof. It was necessary for the government to bring witnesses from a long distance here. The maximum sentence without the safety valve was 97 months. Mr. Moreno received 97 months, and he received 97 months for exercising his constitutional right to go to a jury on a case where two of the co-defendants were directed verdict out, and Mr. Esau Moreno's case was dismissed by the government. It was error for the trial court to hold as a matter of law that if you don't parrot the jury verdict, if you don't admit your guilt, then therefore, by definition, you're not eligible. It's contrary to the plain language of the statute, and it's contrary to the intention of the statute.
What's our standard of review on that?
It's de novo, Your Honor. The interpretation of the plain language of the statute would be de novo. Here, there's no indication in the record that the judge made any sort of credibility determinations or any sort of fact-finding. Instead, he held as a matter of law that if you don't admit your guilt and the jury found you guilty, then you're not eligible. Contrary to its section 3553F5. And the plain language is not if the defendant, not later than the time of sentencing, has truthfully provided to the government all information and evidence the defendant has concerning the offense or offenses, but the fact that the defendant has no relevant or useful information to provide the government, or that the government's already aware of the information, shall not preclude a determination by the court that the defendant has complied with this requirement. The judge essentially held that the jury determined whether or not he was eligible by virtue of its verdict. And so we ask that if the court decides to affirm on sufficiency, that the case be remanded back to the trial court for another sentencing.
Well, but he heard the same evidence the jury heard. Wasn't he just inferring that there was information that was not provided to qualify for the safety valve?
There's nothing in the transcript of sentencing, Your Honor, that indicates that the trial court made any sort of determination, any sort of factual determination whatsoever about him maintaining his innocence. Instead, it was really a logical progression for the court. They found you guilty. They found you had guilty knowledge. You have to admit your guilty knowledge or you're not eligible. There was no indication that the trial court made any sort of a fact-finding.
Can we say that it must have been implicit, like in our unpublished case, the Garcia-Gill or whatever it's called? Couldn't we say it was implicitly found?
I'm not aware of the case, Your Honor, but if you would like additional briefing on how that would be distinguishable, we'd be happy to get that to you before the end of the week.
It's an unpublished case, but it dealt with this issue.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, let's hear from the government. Ms. Wilson.
May it please the court. The focus here has to be on what the jury found after hearing from numerous witnesses and examining numerous documents. The Supreme Court said as much in Jackson versus Virginia. It's a very narrow inquiry, and here we have a jury that was very responsible. They were thorough and they were careful. From the outset, they asked for specific testimony from Agent Ramos. The following day, they asked for tests and reports, so they clearly took the responsibility very seriously. Quickly, I'm going to give the court a checklist of some of the evidence that the jury heard, and then I intend to clarify some of that evidence and go into more detail because I have some disagreements with what the record represents. But the jury heard from the outset that the dog alerted before the vehicle even got to the checkpoint. Agent Trevino said on page 271 that the dog alerted before the truck had even stopped. We also have one of the
What's
agents.
What's the significance of that?
Well, that the scent of the marijuana was so strong because they were transporting approximately 1,300 pounds.
The fact that a dog smells it means that a person would smell it?
Well, but this is, I'm just talking about what the evidence that the jury heard throughout days.
I don't know what that has to do. Why is that evidence important? Nobody's questioned that there was marijuana in there.
Well,
additional
information that we have is that the defendant was not cooperative in answering questions. That's on page 425 of the record. The other information that we have and that the court briefly discussed is that we could see the truck was only 1/8 of the way full for a cross-country trip.
Now, you mean by weight or by volume?
By view. That if you had looked in there, it was only 1/8 full.
Didn't the government concede that there was no way to tell by looking through that dark window?
No, they did not. In fact, there was testimony to the effect that you could see through there and see that it was 1/8 full.
Whose testimony and where?
It's on the agent on page 275 of the record. Also, assuming he was headed to North Carolina, he didn't know where he was going. Another thing the jury heard was...
Say that again?
Assuming he was headed to North Carolina, he didn't have the address of where he was going.
He knew the town he was going to.
Correct, but there was
so
no...
At the border, when he's 1,000 miles away, he knows where he's going.
Well, but he doesn't have a physical address to deliver the cargo. At a minimum, he saw and was familiar with the fraudulent bills of lading for July and September. There was nothing about produce on the bills of ladings, and you asked Judge Wiener about the weight, and exhibit number 38, I just did it sitting there, but it's approximately 3,000 pounds, and you can see it under the carrier information.
Now, what's that, the 3,000 pounds said that's what the load was?
Yes, it said the weight was, and I'm approximating, 3,000 pounds.
So, and that was on the bill of lading?
Correct.
So all he could do was look at the bill of lading. It says 3,000 pounds. That doesn't sound short for a semi, does it? I know it only had 1,300, but he doesn't have it weighed.
That's correct, but if he looks in there, he can see there's only boxes that are approximately 1/8 full. And most trucks, I think it's a fairly...
Well, we see trucks going down the highway on a flatbed trailer with just one piece of metal on the entire truck, but it happens to be heavy.
That's correct. However, in this case, he's supposedly transporting produce. And produce, by definition, or I think realistically, isn't that heavy, even
Wouldn't
if you have grapefruit.
Wouldn't 3,000 pounds of produce be a load?
I can't answer that. I don't have personal knowledge of that, and that wasn't in the record. But I do know that the exhibit showed that the trailer was essentially barely full, which was suspicious. Also, and this is part of the checklist, as you asked about whether Esau was his cousin, the answer was yes. He's also known as Palin. He's the same person who prepared Roman Lerma, who was the fellow that testified. He had pled guilty to conspiracy, but he had prepared Roman for the first trip that Roman took, because Roman took the May trip as well as the October trip. And he prepared Roman and his brother with false bills, the false bill of lading, a truck full of drugs, which Roman knew, and it was approximately 250 pounds.
What did Roman have to do with this defendant?
Well, we just have Esau, who's a common denominator, again. And Roman testified.
He is tarred with the same brush of the knowledge that Esau had?
Well, what the jury heard is that Esau was the one who owned the particular trailer and truck in this case. And so I'm just giving this checklist of generally what they've heard.
But he's missing. He's nowhere to be found, right?
That's correct. He was actually getting ready to be tried right the week after Jaime Moreno was going to be sentenced.
I don't see what his relationship with the other truck and the other driver has to do with this defendant's knowledge.
Well, they also were supposed to be paid the same amount, which is approximately, he was supposed to be paid $5,000, Roman was, and Jaime Moreno, the defendant here, was found with approximately $4,400. And then, of course,
Roman testified, didn't
he? I'm sorry?
Roman testified?
That's correct. And he pled out to conspiracy.
Did he testify that he had told this defendant that, you know, we were all doing this the same? I mean, he didn't testify in any way that implicated.
That's correct. In fact, what he did testify to, the reason his brother got the judgment of acquittal was he testified that his brother did not even know about the drugs. He had just set him up or taken him along for the fall. So he was cut out. And then, of course, here we have Mr. Moreno entrusted with enormous amount of drugs, approximately 1,300 pounds, and, of course, he was driving the truck. Now, I understand that Judge Wiener, at least, doesn't find the scent of marijuana persuasive, but what we do have here is we have a commercial driver with 12 years' experience. He was very savvy. And when they got to the checkpoint, they immediately gave their information about their citizenship. A jury could have concluded that not only were they savvy about the checkpoint procedures, but maybe they knew, you know, they knew it was a well-known drug smuggling corridor, because it's highly unlikely you could have had aliens in those boxes, if you look at the record that were all taped up and whatnot.
Couldn't he also know that they're always looking for aliens and smuggling by illegals, and so he's cutting down on the time waste by saying, wait, I'm a citizen?
Yes, or drugs.
Hmm?
Or drugs. The point is, he's savvy about the checkpoint. He knows the area. He's been a commercial.
That's the same thing about He looked nervous. He didn't look nervous. It plays out itself. He says he's a citizen. He doesn't say he's a citizen.
But these are all. This is all the information that the jury heard, and we're supposed to be viewing the verdict in the light most favorable to the verdict.
What evidence did they hear that the defendant was not cooperative? Because you said that, and I'm not finding that in
your... I believe it's on page 425, where the agent says he consented to the search, but he wasn't cooperative in answering questions. And that's all we have.
Is there anything in the record that says that marijuana could be discernible, the smell of it, to humans at this checkpoint?
The only thing was about the drugs. And we also know that from Roman, as well as common sense, would dictate that a commercial driver would inspect his vehicle before he goes on a long trip. I mean, regular people do, so of course a commercial driver is going to do, which would mean, even if the truck is sealed, that presumably he would have looked inside this vent. It's a small vent, but nonetheless you can see through it. We have undisputed testimony to that effect. On cross-examination of the agent, I believe he was shown, it's hard to tell from the record, but I believe he was shown a viewpoint that made it more difficult to see. But the general testimony is you could see straight through, and I believe one of the exhibits shows that. So he realized that he did not have a lot of cargo. But of course, he also knew about these fraudulent bill of ladings. And on page 428 and 431 of the record, there's testimony that Moreno saw and was familiar with the July and September bill of ladings that were in the truck.
What, say that again?
428 and 431.
The ones that were in the top of the glove compartment that said
well,
he never handled?
Well, they were inside the truck, yes.
I thought opposing counsel said they were up somewhere and he never touched them.
I disagree with that. On page 428 and 431, we have testimony that he saw and was familiar with both of those bill of ladings, the July and September bill of ladings. And we also have Roman, the one who testified at trial, saying it's common practice to look at bill of ladings, which of course also makes sense. And these bill of ladings were very suspicious. They were from the same ship from address, the same bill of lading number, the same trail of number, same customer order information, the same carrier information, although the July bill of lading said that they were transporting coils, and the September bill of lading just has numbers on it. But other than that, the information is identical. And they were both missing the all-important third-party billing information. Judge Wiener asked a question about Turner Enterprises, but there's testimony that that business didn't exist, nor did the address for those bill of ladings. While the street, I can't remember if it's Ware Drive or Ware Street, that particular street exists. There's no business on that particular street.
Was that where he picked up the truck? What is the record?
We don't know, and I'll be quite frank, Your Honor. The record is very thin on that type of information, so I'm giving you what I can, but we don't know where he picked it up. Presumably...
Well, the record doesn't even imply that he had a relationship with Turner. He had a relationship with the cousin who owned the tractor.
My understanding is Turner, the business Turner, did not exist either. And
right.
Certainly there was...
But what I'm saying is he never testified or anybody that this was picked up from Turner. That was just on the...
Well, it was on the bill of lading.
Yeah.
Even Judge Head, outside the presence of the jury, thought that any reasonable truck driver would be aware of the lack of validity of the bill of lading and the similarity of the bill of ladings, and that's on page 472. In other words, this is an experienced truck driver.
Is there evidence in the record from somebody, an expert or something, that said a truck driver would be aware that this would be implausible? You said that Judge Head commented on it outside the presence of the jury, but is there evidence from somebody you brought in that drives trucks or whatever that says this is not good and any truck driver would know that XYZ is wrong and it would be a red flag immediately because truck drivers are trained in that?
Well, as I said, Roman says a truck driver always looks at the bill of lading because it's a sort of, it's their roadmap where to go.
Right,
in other words,
say that this one was deficient or a red flag. Is there evidence in the record of that?
Well, I think it's implicit, and I also think that we know that he saw both of them and they were identical. With the exceptions that I already noted.
Right, it's got a city in North Carolina.
That's
it's
correct.
Got a name of a company that's the recipient. That company is in
Rocky Mount.
Rocky Mount.
That's correct.
The only thing missing is a street address, right?
That's correct. That is correct. And there is no information.
Rocky Mount isn't Los Angeles. It's not like it would be a difficult thing to find if it's there.
Right. And there's no information in the record whether he was actually going there or not. The only information we have is that's where he told the agents, I think her name was Centeno, at the checkpoint because, of course, he had just pretty much started on his journey. So that is correct. That's.
Well, I think that's the whole case. He is just starting on this journey. All this business testimony from QVC about we wouldn't have accepted everything, that's not relevant to this because of where he was stopped.
Well, but the point about these bill of ladings is when you look at them, it's pretty obvious that they're marked similarities, and it's also obvious that some of the key information is missing.
If he's getting in there, he's on the 20th of September. Bill of lading is dated 20th of September to Rocky Mount. The fact that there's an old one from July sitting in the truck, that's just remnants. I mean, what does that mean?
Well, it means that there's fraudulent information if you look at both of them. There's the same billing numbers, trailer numbers, customer information, weight, all this other stuff, all this duplicative information.
A truck driver, what is the evidence, as Judge Elrod asked, where's the expert, where's the testimony that a truck driver who gets in and has a current bill of lading and sees that there's an old stale one, he's going to put them and compare them line by line and say, oh, look, they have the same number, all of that. That's pure speculation.
Well, we know that he was at least familiar with them. And then, of course, we have to return to the all-important that he was carrying approximately 1,300 pounds of drugs. That's a lot of drugs. And there's a plethora of cases from this court that talks about those kind of situations where typically, why would you entrust someone with that many drugs unless they were inside operation? That's not a personal use by any definition.
And why would you allow these drugs to go with
I'm sorry?
Them? Why would you, if you're the drug dealer, why would you package this up and send it with, as you say, an unwitting driver if he doesn't know where he's going? There is no address. Surely the jury could use that information to determine that he knew what he had, because why would anyone trust him? He could just disappear into Canada with their drugs.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly the import, once again, of Jackson versus Virginia, is the jury was able to evaluate all of this testimony and all of these witnesses. I see my time is running a little thin. I'd like to visit briefly about the safety valve. The burden was on Mr. Moreno to prove his entitlement to the safety valve. And the district court independently determined that he hadn't met his burden and wasn't entitled. At the outset, I agree that the district court did talk about the jury verdict. However, the sentencing was such that I believe that the court revisited it and implicitly found that the court not only implicitly made an independent determination, but also made some findings. On page 710 of the record, the court finds that Moreno was partially responsible for the destabilization of Mexico. He also found that he was not credible on page 713, and he believed the jury, and he also found that it was a sophisticated operation and the defendant's role was significant, and that was on page 714. And he also recognized that the defendant had the right to go to trial. So it wasn't as though he was saying that you can never be innocent and get the safety valve. What this particular judge, who's extremely experienced, Judge Head, he's seen drug case after drug case, found all of these things and simply found Mr. Moreno not the least bit credible. He also had access to the PSR. And the PSR, we learned that Mr. Moreno had some cocaine and marijuana problems or issues, if you will. And in fact, I think part of the sentencing, he was actually sent to the Bureau of Prisons, that rehab program that they have, or he asked for it. And I think if the evidence had not been credible, then the district court would have taken the matter in his own hands, as he did with Cirillo and Jesus Lermer, and granted those acquittals. And based on that, I think the denial of the safety valve was plausible in light of the record as a whole. And for these reasons, we believe that the court should affirm the judgment of conviction and sentence.
Was there any, I'm sorry, can, was there anything in the record that, because this guy is his cousin, that there's some view that his, he would have talked to him about his drug dealing in the past, or is there, there's nothing, because the guy
there's
wasn't there.
No, Your Honor.
Is
However,
there anything, but does it cut the other way, that well, because the guy could trust him because he's his cousin, that he's not going to drive the truck off to, you know how you said, oh, in a normal case, you wouldn't let some unknowing person take it. Does it, could it be used to the other side's advantage to say, well, he knows his cousin's not going to take his...
Honestly, I could make that argument. However, I think it's also important that I point out to you in the Ravelis case, the brother was setting up the other brother. So, in fairness, who knows? You can have a bad sibling or a bad relative, quite frankly. But again, I don't think, even though we have some absence of evidence here and there, I don't think that we can convert that into negative inferences or positive inferences. We have to take the evidence as the jury heard it and the jury saw it, and after their careful deliberations. Thank you.
Judge Elrod, I'd like to address the question before as to the bill of lading being found in an overhead compartment. That's in 429 and 431 of the record. And I'll let the record reflect that our position that Mr. Jaime Moreira Gonzalez saw the bills of lading, and that was the extent of the testimony. Now, I would also like to address what the government has stated, that Mr. Jaime Moreno was cooperative. That's not the case whatsoever. There's testimony from Agent Centenario and case Agent Ramos that indeed he was extremely cooperative. He showed no signs of nervousness. He cooperated. He answered all the agent's questions, and he consented to of the search of the trailer without any hesitation whatsoever. At some point, he refused to answer any more questions, but that doesn't mean he wasn't cooperative at the time he was stopped. He was extremely cooperative. The record will reflect that. Also, I would like to point out there's been some questions by the court as to what the standard practice of a truck driver is. There was no testimony put up before the government as to what a standard practice was, and the record reflects that the case agent in this case, Agent Ramos, was a former truck driver. And after the government could have easily, he was there in trial. I was a trial attorney. They offered to put him up as a rebuttal witness, and they did not offer any rebuttal testimony as to our two witnesses in this case.
What will we find in the record? It sounds like I was confused based on Ms. Wilson's correction of me. I thought that there was, it was either conceded or acknowledged that this load was not visible or detectable or identifiable from outside of the trailer.
Court's not mistaken. It was not visible from outside the trailer. That testimony came from Special Agent, I believe it was Trevino. He was one of the agents that was present at the time the seal was physically broken with some, what the record reflected were some kind of heavy-duty tools. What he testified to is that from the outside of the trailer, if you were looking in, from his perspective, at that time when he was pulled over, in other words, we don't know what condition, there's nothing in the record to reflect what time, what condition, it was when Jaime Moreno picked up the truck. From that perspective, in the middle of the day, early morning, if you open that little small hatch, all you could see is a U-Haul box. All you could see is a box. Couldn't see anything else. That's it. That's what the record reflects.
But you could see without taking the seal off, you could look through a little window or something.
Correct. There's a small window, I believe it's approximately 12 by 6, a very small window that you can open and look through and just kind of take a visual of the load. But again, there's nothing in the record that reflects that.
Well, was the argument of the government that if you could look through that window and see U-Haul boxes, that would be counterintuitive to it being produce, or is produce in boxes?
You know, I think the court is well aware that produce can be hauled in many different shapes and forms. There's no specific way in how to haul produce. If you looked through it, you saw boxes, U-Haul boxes. It's conceivable that that he believed that there was indeed produce in that vehicle. There's no testimony to contradict that. Briefly, I want to address the government's position about the value of the drugs. Their position circumvents what's precedent in this case, or before this court, is that whenever there's an unwitting driver, there's a fair assumption, or whenever it's a hidden compartment case, there's a fair assumption that it's an unwitting driver. Criminal enterprises and drug dealers could often use unwitting drivers to transport their drugs, and there was a manner that he could retrieve these drugs. Yes, the address was not filled out correctly, but as Jesus Cuellar and Roman Lerma testified, that oftentimes they're redirected from where the ship-to address is addressed in the bill of lading. That's common practice. That happens all the time. That's what the record reflects. I'd like to leave the court with this final thought. Would this court, given the evidence that's before them, hesitate whatsoever to reverse this case if it were not a border case or a case that's close proximity to the U.S.-Mexico border? As we know, the Fourth Amendment has been watered down significantly in that region. As a member of that community, as a member of that society, as a member of the South Texas community, I ask this court not to further water down some of the other sacred constitutional rights that we have in this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have the argument.